going to do something a little bit differently. Brian Bird will be our lecturer on archaeological drafting, and he's going to show a few slides and then a few demonstrations and then see what you can do, see what it's like to actually try some drafting. Brian's done a lot of archaeological work both in the New World, North America, and in the Middle East. He's been in Jordan now for a little over a year, coming over to work with the Ain Ghazal project last winter. After that got rained out, Brian worked on a number of different projects, doing some drafting for ACOR and drafting for other projects. And since this fall, Brian's been working full-time up at the University of Yarmouk, doing archaeological drafting as well as photography, a lot of film development. So if Henry's not around to ask about the photography, you can always go to Brian too, because he's got quite a bit of experience in that field now too. So I should mention also perhaps that Brian got his university degree from the University of Arizona. And the Arizonans seem to be taking over. Every year we get two or three more, so it's really kind of scary.
Well, tonight's going to be a little different just because to draft and to talk about drafting is kind of hard. Unless you have it in your hand, it doesn't mean very much. So I'll just talk a few general things, and then I'll pass out some objects and have everyone try their luck. And I also have essentially all my equipment that I brought down tonight, and I'll show you a little bit of what those things are. And anyone who wants to try some of those on other things is welcome to it. And we'll just try to sort of work it around and see how people go. Now, drafting in archaeology is one of the basics, and every archaeologist always has to do a lot of drafting, whether it's with a site map, or whether it's with drawing plans or sections in the site, or whether it's having to deal with your own things because you don't have the money to hire an illustrator. You're always faced with it. There's sort of three levels of those things which we have to draw. Site plans on the most general level, either on surveys or preliminary maps on sites prior to excavation. The detail level of those will vary depending on the situation. A lot of surveys, when you go out and you find a site, you might just want to do a sketch map of some of the features on it, or you might merely want to indicate where it is located topographically. And then you can take that all the way up to the level of doing detailed contour maps for transits or plane tables and alleys, and pretty much anything in between. People will sometimes take hand compasses and do pace maps, hand compasses shooting directions and using tapes. Essentially, the basic idea is to plot things on a three-dimensional level. And as long as you know a little simple geometry, you can go. And there's no really hard and fast rules for making site maps. It really simply depends on the level of detail that you want to obtain and also the time you have to deal with it. Now, during the excavations, things become a little more rigorous. Generally, every excavation square will have a series of top plans and a series of bulk drawings which they'll be dealing with. And each site, you try to generally set up a vertical datum and a horizontal datum, and things will be tried to be tied into those. Each square then will have a series of points which you'll try to work things into also. Now I have some slides here that I want to just show you some general photographs of some maps and what sorts of things that will want to be included on those. Let me turn off the lights, please. Let's see. Well, where's the advance? Oh, okay. Now, in creating maps for publication, oftentimes you'll want to have a general view of where your site is in location to major topographic features. Now, this is just not one of the best slides in the world, but it does show some main points. For example, here is the site area. is tied into the Asrock area and a number of major wadis and roads. Often when you're drawing maps of large geographic areas, it's not necessary to put on north because it's convention to put north at the top. But always a scale is necessary. On occasion, you'll see publications where they'll just mention the scale on the bottom. But you can run into a lot of problems with that, particularly if there's so much copying of maps these days in Xerox and scales tend to get off. So as a rule, you should always put a scale on the bottom. So that's just a simple general map that...
Before you move it.
This is to the east, in the eastern desert, the Asrock area. So it's not very far.
What's the cut?
The cut, I'm sorry?
Yeah, what is the black area, the site area?
That's the site area. That's the location of the site.
What site is it?
It's I'm not sure the exact name. It's a Jebel Uwene site. It's a Handak site, one of the map sites. And beyond that, it's about all I know about. Now, this is a little bit more detailed map where you try to bring in some of the topographic features. The site is located here. Now, on a map of this scale, where you don't have very many topographic features to tie in, general towns and such, north arrow is necessary. Scale, again, also necessary. This site is here. There's also a lighter artifact scatter around it, and that's been indicated by the dots, or what we often call stippling. So here you're trying to, on this particular map, the person is trying to show that this is up on top of a plateau with quite a stringent, very deep drainage system. So again, that's another basic map. Now, for detailed excavations, a map of this sort is general. This is a topographic map. It was done with a theodolite, which ties in both horizontal and vertical elements at the same time. You can see here, you can see a series of contour intervals. The contour will be indicated, two meter interval, as well as a number of the major physiographic features. Here we have a series of roads, a number of escarpments on the top, as well as the excavation squares themselves are indicated. Now these are probably the most detailed maps archaeologists make of a site in general. And that's usually restricted to sites where people are planning to excavate, or they want to look at some fairly important topographic features. Now here's a shot of a plan of the same site. And again, meter, north arrow in. And the attempt is to show a series of structures within the excavated area. Now this is just made for a slide talk, so it doesn't have the detail of a lot of plans which you'll find in excavation drawing. But when you're showing something to an audience, it's often, it's harder to put more things in on it and people still see it. But essentially you can make out a series of walls of stones, an array of grinding stones on a floor, a burial, a hearth, and then general information on which top plan that is. The other thing which people are always called upon to draw is sections. And this is a section from an early man site. And although it's probably not one of the best examples, it does show the layering which occurs, and it shows the names of the different layers as you go down, and it gives someone an idea of what the stratigraphy at the site was like. Now the other thing that you'll find in every publication is the drawings of the objects, the artifacts. And you know, Henry last time was talking about photography and photographing objects. In general, the drawings and photographs tend to complement each other. Oftentimes, the drawings will be of a more technical nature. They'll tend to show things of conventions, and they'll tend to show sections of objects which a photograph itself couldn't give. However, photographs give often a better feel for an object. They have a better feeling of depth, because an illustrator has to use his own sort of interpretive feelings to try to give you an idea of the shading and such. Now this is a hand axe from early man's site. And the convention in scientific illustration is that lighting comes from the upper left hand side. this direction, so that on this side of an object which is has some curve to it will be the darkest area. Up here will be the lightest. And that's always the convention. Any sort of scientific drawing, always try to do that. And immediately, as soon as someone sees a drawing, they can have a feel for the object just by the convention itself. Now, when you draw flints, for example, you want to show the flake scars, where the flakes have been removed. And probably the most common convention for showing which direction these flakes were removed is these curved lines. The idea of this flake was removed in this direction, this flake was removed in this direction. And oftentimes, from looking at the drawing itself, you can have an idea of the order in which a lot of the last flakes were taken off an object. Now, I have one other slide that isn't flint. Oh, I guess this isn't flint still. Again, the idea is that you're looking from the upper left down, and the shading should be darkest on the lower right. Now, here's a series of things. Often, you want to have a section of an object. And the convention generally for that is just two lines across it, and that's the section of this object. Now this is looking at the object straight on from that edge, showing just the face. Here's some detail on that one. This has a couple of things of interest. One is the use of pencil shading. Most drawings you'll find using because it's easiest to reproduce, but you can get a lot of shading with pencil. The other alternative to pencil, which is the most common today, is what's called Zipotel, and it's essentially a series of dots, dense levels. You have very, very widely spaced dots or very closely spaced dots. And they give the appearance of different shades of gray. People often use those to bring out different contrasts. Now, the other way of indicating contouring, otherwise the stippling, is with lines. Denser lines around the back side, less lines around the upper left hand side, to give the object some depth. Well, I'm not sure, to be honest, on this one, but it might be reconstructed. Most of the time in drawing objects in the lab, the draftsman has to deal constantly with the archaeologist because there's all sorts of things you can put on the drawing. You can have really beautiful objects, but if you're not showing the information that the archaeologist wants to get across, it doesn't make anything. It's meaningless. So there has to be constant contact between the archaeologist and the draftsman. And that's why it often helps for people to have some experience in archaeology who are drafting. Now, I've got a series of things that I've drawn, which I'll pass around. Take a glance at those. Xerox, pass those around. Now, in inking, most of the time, people use what's called a technical pen set. It's a series of pens which have a regulated flow of ink coming out of the top, generally very even lines. The other alternative is to use what's called a Proflow. And the distribution of the Proflow pen is limited by how much pressure you put on the pen tip itself. And this is the tip of the Proflow, a very fine one. And they're held in small little. And those control inking. Now, in trying to get the object represented as well as possible, a series of technical instruments are used. Calipers are very common. Those are excellent for getting widths, thicknesses, the whole series of things. For taking, for example, exteriors of pots, a caliper of this sort is useful. Is very suitable. Essentially what you do is you put it on like so and measure a series of widths with the calipers. And put it on, and you can lift it off, put it onto the rim, and work them down. Now, I'm working on the inside of the pot. You have what they call interior calipers, which are work as so. And this distance is the same as the interior distance. So by putting the calipers inside the pot, spreading it apart, you can measure the distance from the outside. You get the object there. Now, in drawing smooth curves, a little bit of a cheater thing. It's called this mimic tracer. A lot of people like this because it's very easy to get the impression of an object. Simply all you have to do is press shapes to it, pull it away, and that's your object. And that's fine if you're using something on smooth curves like this, but if you take something with a lot of sharp angles, the thickness of these of the small little rods in here will obscure the breaks, changes in direction. So it works very nicely for objects like that. Another great cheater thing, which I used to use all the time when I was first starting out, is this. And it's what they call it is a contour shape. But essentially, you can put it in any shape you like. You fold it on the board, and you draw that line. So if you got the shaky hand, you just put this thing down. You try to hold yourself to it, you know, and draw. And it's a nice instrument, especially after you had about 3 cups of coffee. That's really good. Now, the other thing which is very common, French curves. They use the same thing as this. The only problem is you'll have to pick out the curve you want to find. Let's say if you've done your pot. You have decided to put it down in pencil, and you want to ink it for the final thing. You don't have the confidence in your hand to draw a straight line. You can find one of these curves, which will match up with it. Put that down, and draw the curve before you produce this. Now, drawing pottery is probably one of the most difficult things. This object upstairs, which is incredible. I started drooling when I first saw it. And what you do, for example, in this large pot, if I can imagine holding it, it takes a lot of time to draw this pot, is to yes, Ben, have you named it? Probably Sowers. Probably James Sowers. Object. Now, just place the pot on here, those supports. Get it level. And if you can imagine this, stick this object. This will be placed against the side of the pot. And there's a pencil here, which is at the same distance. Essentially, what you do is put it to the pot and you work it around. Pencil draws the paper down here. And in half a second, you've got the side of the pot. Still, you can't go inside the pot, unfortunately. You've got the entire outside. And if you did, for example, if you took a series of points measuring them, it would be forever, and it wouldn't be anywhere near as accurate. Now, there is a number. There's really, when you start drawing, your imagination is the limits of the system you can rig up. This is all just rigged up by hand. Somebody's idea of what would be very useful, what would be clever, and whatever you can figure out to work, that's great. There are, however, a number of techniques which do a lot of the same things. Up at Yarmouth, we have one called Graphic Arts Drawing Machine. I don't know if you can see this very well. Essentially what it is, the artifact or the drawing down at the bottom. And we have a little detail right here. The object up the last level. You then move the bottom up and down and choose the size you want to draw your object at. And then take really speeds up the work. This is an example here, photographic. I've got paper and I've got pencil. And what I want you to do is take one view of the flint and try to represent it on the paper by simply by putting in the flake scars. And then if you want, you want to try some shading over there.